Hi. Hi, my name is Mary. I am a compulsive overeater. Let me just say I'm a grateful member of Overeaters Anonymous. So grateful for, first of all, for the invitation and grateful for the opportunity to be among you, this fellowship which has saved my life and has brought me such joy, brought me friends. Something I never really had in life, and brought me a community, a common unity, unity among people who understand, who speak my language, my tribe, my peeps. Let me just say, you are my people, and I'm so grateful for the opportunity to speak today. So, first of all, let me qualify what qualifies me as a compulsive overeater. Well, I've had years and years of experience in that area. Let me just say that. I came to Overeaters Anonymous in March of 1985. So I just celebrated 40 years in program. So I say that with a small degree of regret and shame. And because I know shame doesn't work for me, I won't dwell on that part. But let me just say that relapse has been a part of my story. And unfortunately, it's been a pretty big part. So, three major relapse while never leaving the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous. Let me just say that part. So, I came into the program in March of 1985 in Chicago, Illinois. My sister-in-law actually drugged me into the meeting. I was at Washington Park Field House. When I got there, probably about 20 people sitting around in chairs, all various sizes, both genders were there, various colors and nationalities were there. And what happened was a miracle because I actually heard my story and I heard people sharing things about food that I never would have shared with another human being, the things that I've done with food. I never would have shared that in an open setting. But here were people who were talking about it, who were happy, who were laughing, who were enjoying life. And I was actually that angry Black woman when I came in into the doors of OA. I was married to an alcoholic, and that marriage lasted, I'll say, 24 years, probably about 8 months. Some point, like I said, I'm a hard study. So at some point I just said, you know what, this marriage is dead. The lawyer told me dead things need to be buried. And that's exactly what I did. So I didn't have anything to celebrate. And so there's no need of making it to year 25. But anyway, I walked in that room weighing over 250 pounds and angry at the world. And I heard my story being told over and over again. There was one particular lady that I zeroed in on. And the reason I zeroed in on her is wasn't because she was the thinnest person in the room. She was actually still a little heavy boned. And but her demeanor was what caught my attention. She was calm, she was peaceful. And she was serene, something that I knew nothing about coming from a household with six children and two adults, an adult alcoholic and a codependent mother, and six crazy, dysfunctional kids. So her demeanor is what struck me. And at that very first meeting, I asked her to be my sponsor, and she agreed. And this was the person who I am convinced that God put in my life. Because she didn't take any of my BS. She took none of my excuses. She took none of it. She knew the big book backwards and forwards. She was always quoting me the page and the paragraph number where it could be found. And she was always on spot. And I would come in whining about why I hadn't done this, why I hadn't written out this assignment, why I hadn't done. And she would say in this calm, peaceful voice. Yeah, but what was your part in that? What was your part in it? So I would be first. My favorite topic was this alcoholic husband. Oh, he stayed out all night. He stayed gone 2 or 3 days. He did X, Y, and Z. And she would say, oh, ever so sweetly, yeah, but what was your part in it? And I was wondering, did you actually hear what I said? He is the one that did this. He is the one that's drinking. He is the one that's wasting the money. He. And but she would just repeat to me, what was your part in it? And you know, it was actually years later that I was able to see that I actually had a part in that, I was the doormat. I allowed him to walk over me all that time. I allowed him to come back into the household after being gone several days without challenging him and without holding him accountable. So I had a part that I played in it, whether I wanted to admit it or not. So anyway, but like I said, she was a godsend. And she took me through the first 3 steps. And what I remember, how I remember this first relapse, was my favorite brother died of sickle cell anemia. And in our culture, we all gather together, everybody brings over a ton of food, and you sit around and eat and talk about the deceased and laugh about different, you know, times in your life when these events happen. And so someone brought a dish and I inhaled this plate. Now I had lost 65 pounds. Everything she told me to do, I did without question. If she had told me to jump to the moon, I would have done that. But here I was with this plate in front of me, and I just inhaled the whole plate and was looking for more. And I didn't realize that the hole that I was trying to fill was a grief hole that only God could fill for me. So I was trying to fill it with food. And I don't have to tell you what happened. That was the start of my first relapse. And it took me years and years to be willing to work the program to that extent again. And as a result, let me just say that I never left the rooms of OA because I knew there was nowhere else for me to go. Had been to Weight Watchers, been to Jenny Craig, been to doctors, had shots and pills. Every diet that came out, I had to try it. You know the story. I don't have to go any further with that part. So it was nowhere else for me to go. It was actually the last house on the end of the block. So I just kept coming back, even though I was binging. I just kept coming back. And I heard different various slogans that when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. That one day at a time, and to let go and let God, all of those things I heard, but I was still binging and I was still trying to stuff down emotions. And what I've come to understand is that for me, I am an emotional eater. I try to stuff down feelings because I don't want to feel the feelings. Now, I belong to other 12-step programs, and it's the same in all of them. You know, I just gravitate to whatever is closest. And for me, the closest thing is food. I can just get up, walk 10 paces, and there's the refrigerator, and I can find something to stuff down the emotions. But I'm grateful to say today that I am abstinent. One day at a time, this program has worked for me. And like I said, I had another period of abstinence, and here was the second relapse. Had lost, it's something about 65 pounds in my head. Something in this brain tells me that when I've lost 65 pounds, that I don't have to be as rigorously honest. I don't have to be as tough on myself. Oh, you've got this. You know, you've turned the corner on this. You don't have to go to all those meetings. You don't have to do the steps that I've been taking in order. No, let me rephrase that, because I wasn't really working the steps. I was actually treating OA just like another diet. In the back of my mind, I had convinced myself that at some point I was going to be that normal eater. I didn't care what you said. I was going to prove you wrong. I was going to find the answer. And it wasn't going to mean that I had to give up my favorite food. Nope. I was going to prove you wrong in that regard. So I got to 65-pound weight loss. I'm sitting at the gym working on the bicep curls. And then I get this feeling come over me. And it's a feeling I've had a couple of times in the past. Well, I know what's going to happen. I'm going to black out. And so, if you've ever done the arm curls, you know the stack of weights is like right in front of you. And it's like, I need to get up from here before I hit my head on this stack of weights. Well, I didn't do it. I didn't hit my head on a stack of weights, thank God, but I fell over to the side. Long story short about that, they ran tests and they found out that I had what is it called? I don't even want to say the words myself. Epilepsy. I'm 60 years old and I'm just finding out that I am epileptic. So my doctor sent a letter to DMV canceling my driving privileges and resentments and anger stored up. It was like you had taken away my freedom. I was so angry at my doctors. I was angry at DMV. I was angry at the world. And needless to say, that 65 pounds came back along with some additional friends. And so that was the second relapse. The third relapse, I don't even remember, and it really doesn't matter. The bottom line is that I've had three relapses of over 65 pounds. Right now, I am at about 60 pounds. So I'm a little apprehensive because I've been in this territory before. But the difference today is that I'm working the steps. The steps are the answer. The steps are the solution. The steps are just visualize the staircase where I am at the bottom. At the top is recovery, and I'm walking up the steps to recovery. I might get a little winded or a little tired, so then I grab hold to the handrails. And what are the handrails? The handrails are the tools of the program. So when I get weary and get a little off balance, let me grab a tool that I can use. Now, if you are a do-it-yourselfer or a handyman, you know that a tool is only good if you pull it out of the waistband and actually use it. It doesn't do any good to have the tool up on the wall just to look at it if you never pull it down and put it to any use. So today I can say that I'm working an honest program and I'm working the tools. So before I get too far off base, which I think I probably already have, the question came to me as I was trying to figure out what I wanted to speak about today. And it was, are you happy, joyous, and free yet? Are you happy, joyous, and free yet? And so I wanted to look in the big book and find out exactly where that writing was. And lo and behold, it's found on page 133. The family afterwards. Real interesting section. And so let me just read this. It says, everybody knows that those in bad health and those who seldom play do not laugh much. So let's each family member play together or separately as much as their circumstances warrant. We are sure God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. We cannot subscribe to the belief that this is like a veil of tears, though it once was just that for many of us. But it is clear that we have made our own misery. God didn't do it. Avoid then the deliberate manufacture of misery. But if trouble comes, cheerfully capitalize it as an opportunity to demonstrate his omnipotence or his power. So I thought that was really interesting, and I'm glad that I found it. I've got to revisit it because there was something else in there, a couple of paragraphs up, that had to deal with the fact that we're not a glum lot. You know, and I think about myself when I came into this program over 40 years ago. I was pretty glum. I was pretty angry. I was full of resentment. All those things drove me to the food because I am an emotional eater. And and then the key to most of that was fear. Fear. I have a myriad of fears. I have the fear of success. I have the fear of failure. I have the fear of heights. I have the fear of poverty. I have the fear, fear, fear. But I heard somebody in the rooms a year ago say something to the effect that
Gentle
I may be
reminder.
afraid. 5 minutes? Okay. I may be afraid, but I just do it afraid. And that has always stuck with me. And so when I got a text last night about doing this meeting, oh my God, I don't have anything prepared. I haven't written anything down. What am I going to talk about? Higher power just came through and said, just do it afraid. Just do it afraid. Just walk in, walk up to the fear. I read this a couple of weeks ago. Walk up to the fear, acknowledge it. I see you. And then say to it, I respect you. But today, I'm not going to listen to you. I see you. I respect you. But I'm not going to listen to you today. And just do it afraid. I've heard it said another way. I show up, I suit up, I show up, and I shut up. I decided in January that I needed a kickstart to my program because it had gotten a little stagnant. And for me, this compulsive overeater, I have a tendency when things are going too well to self-sabotage and to just pull the whole structure down on top of my head. I don't know if anybody can identify with that. Oh no, things are just going too well. Let me see how I can screw it up in some way, shape, or form and just pull the whole structure down. Or having a food fight with myself. I no longer do that because guess who always wins the food fight? It's not me, it's the food. And so today, I'm no longer being ruled by fears. I acknowledge my fears. I'm working an honest program today. Talked with my sponsor last night. I'm not trying to skip any steps. I'm working it as if my life depends upon it. And as a result of that, I have a relationship with a loving higher power. And I don't know how much time I got left, probably not enough to tell this story, but let me see if I can squeeze it in. It took me many years to do step three because I was a person who had religious convictions. I knew the Lord, or so I thought. But 1 year I read that chapter to the agnostics. I always skipped over it because it didn't apply to me. I know God, you know. I finally sat down and read it, and boy, was I surprised to see myself in those pages. Yeah, I may have known of God, but I didn't have a personal relationship with him. I thought he was a judgmental judge that was gonna keep score of all my wrongdoings. On the final day, he was gonna open up the book of life, see my name was not written in it, slam it shut, and send me to the lower parts of the earth. That was not a God that I was willing to turn my will and my life over to his care. Just was not gonna happen because I didn't trust that entity. So someone told me, fire that God and get a God of your own understanding. And I now have a loving, benevolent, caring relationship with my higher power that I check in with every day and every night. So I know my time is up. Somebody's just being really kind. Thank you so much, and I'll stop there.